Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Today's episode of Locked On Heat was recorded before the news of Chris Bosh's failed physical. We talk a lot about if he's unavailable for training camp, so the episode is still relevant. Just wanted to let you know in the name of transparency. Dave and I will be back with more Bosh stuff tomorrow. All right, on with the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Training camp's just a few days away. This is Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, here as always with David Ramil. We're going to the Bahamas. Well, we're not, but the Heat are.
I'd love to be there. Unfortunately, we weren't invited, but you know, there's always next year, and I'm confident that you and I will both make the squad.
We should definitely try out when they post the open tryouts. We'll give it. I think I can start working on my 3-point shot now, and by then, maybe have a real opportunity.
I think there's a real future for both of us.
Josh McRoberts only has so much longer, so somebody's got to take a spot. So the Heat, you wonder really about why the Heat have these things in the Bahamas sometimes, but I mean, how many other teams can do something like this? I mean, what can the Clippers and the Lakers could go to maybe Hawaii or something, but
which they've done during the Phil Jackson era. Huh?
But people wonder, like, why do people always want to go play with Pat Riley and Heat? This is, I think, more of maybe like a recruiting statement, if anything. It's great for the players. Like, I don't discount like the value of going away on like a retreat almost. Like, there is definitely value to that. But I also think it's almost like an organizational statement. Like, you play for the Heat, we have our training camp in the Bahamas, assholes.
I mean, that's a strong statement, I guess. If they weren't NBA players that can always go to the Bahamas whenever they want to. I mean, I guess there is some appeal there, but I'm thinking in terms of the last time they did this was during the Big Three era when they needed to go in there and kind of focus on things a little bit and kind of build cohesion that may have been a little bit disjointed. I want to say that they went to the Bahamas during the second year of the Big Three era. Mm-hmm. After they had lost the Mavericks the previous season in the finals. And I think that's kind of what the goal was, to regain some of that focus and understand what was at stake here, which is, you know, during that era, always a title. And so while a title may not be necessarily in the cards for this team, certainly regaining focus is. And there's a lot of questions going into training camp. And the best place to address them is away from a bulk of the media that's probably not able to travel to the Bahamas and watch the team, et cetera. So you can really concentrate, even in an idyllic setting like the Bahamas, you can still concentrate on what you need to do in order to, you know, get focused on the upcoming season.
And there are a lot of questions. So we're going to talk about some of the key training camp questions. This is our training camp preview, so to speak. Training camp officially starts Tuesday. Media day is Monday. Then they go over to the Bahamas. So we're going to talk about some questions. We're going to cover some of the key things that the Heat need to work on. And at the end of the podcast, we'll just go over some of the key roster battles among the 19 players currently on the roster. So let's start with our first question. Can Goran Dragic take the reins? Now, we've covered this ad nauseum so far on the podcast, but he's back from his trip in Slovenia, or his you know, basketball playing in Slovenia in the EuroBasket tournament. He is working out with his teammates. What was the first time? It was Wednesday morning. He was reportedly working out with his teammates. And now he's going to the Bahamas, obviously, with this team. How important is this training camp going to be? And how confident are you that Dragic, even though he was in Slovenia for all this time while a lot of these other guys were working out together, can take the reins of this offense?
It's a little tricky, but I think he has to go in there and recognize this for the opportunity that it is for him to establish himself early on as one of the, if not the leader of this team. I mean, we talked about the leadership gap that was, you know, created by the absence of Dwayne Wade, the departure of Wade. And while you look to Udonis Haslam and others as being more moral leaders, until such a time as we get Chris Bosh officially on the team or not, it looks like this is probably going to be, at least stylistically, a team molded after Goran Dragic's, you know, unique talents. And so he has an incredible opportunity here to kind of establish himself. And that's going to be difficult considering the glut of players in the backcourt, the fact that there are a lot of players that are new to the team and don't necessarily know what Goran is capable of doing, and they haven't had the experience of playing with him. And I think there is going to be, as much as we've talked about it before, I think there's going to be a little bit of a cultural difference there for a guy like Dragic. You know, I think he has to go in there and kind of establish himself as a European player that might not necessarily be as nuanced in how in dealing with these kinds of teammates. He has to go and set the template early on how he wants this team run. And then he has to go out there and fulfill that promise that he makes to the rest of his teammates.
I think one thing benefiting Goran Dragic right now, I actually like that he was playing in Slovenia, first of all. A lot of people are wondering, sure, okay, is he going to be fatigued and everything? Remember last year, he came into training camp. You know, his wife had a difficult pregnancy last summer, and so he was dealing with a family situation. He came into the season a little out of shape, and Pat Riley wasn't happy with him, reportedly. And this season, he's been just balling out in Slovenia and doing his thing. I like that. And he played well. He averaged more than almost 19 points a game, I think, in over there, and 6 assists a game, or some really, really good numbers. If he can carry that momentum into this, I like that his whole summer has just been hoops. You know, I like that. But yeah, one thing that's also helping him, I think, is you look at that roster last year. Chris Bosh was ready to go. Dwayne Wade, Luol Deng were obviously on that roster as veteran leaders and presences on that team. Mari Stoudemire as well. I mean, there was a lot of veteran players on that roster that are obviously not on this team. So Goran Dragic walks in as a 30-year-old as basically just kind of, you know, hey, I'm the new point guard, you know, what can I do? And now this team is so much younger. They are going to have to look at Goran Dragic as one of the veterans in that locker room. As you mentioned, whether or not he likes it or not, you know, he is one of the veterans in this team where, you know, a lot of guys were older than him before. Now he's one of the oldest guys on the roster. And I think a lot of these guys are going to look at him and be like, all right, captain, where are we going? And I think that's going to help him. Maybe he doesn't have to come in and just step on the throat and say, hey, I'm here. I'm the leader of this team. This is my ship now. It's going to be a situation where I think where a lot of the young guys are saying, all right, take us where we need to go, Goran. So one of those young guys also is going to be Hassan Whiteside. $98 million contract, 4-year deal. Huge pay leap, brand new mansion, probably a bunch of new cars and a lot of new toys. Still feels slighted by NBA 2K, so it's still the same hold Hassan Whiteside in that case. But regardless, it's going to be a new status. We talked about it on our preview of the big men on the roster, how before everything Whiteside was doing was just icing on the cake, and now it's going to be expected of him. You pay a guy almost $100 million, that's what happens. This is obviously a big question. Can Whiteside embrace his new status? To you, what does that even mean? A lot of people are talking about can he live up to his contract? What does that even entail?
I think, as we talked about before, I think it's developing his game consistently. Now, we've seen some really nice things from him in the past, particularly as a rim protector and particularly as a finisher at the rim. But he needs to be able to diversify what he does, both defensively and offensively. And obviously, I think we've talked about it as far as a weakness in Whiteside's game, that he does chase blocks at times. There are numbers to back up the fact that the team is slightly more efficient with him off the floor, et cetera. I don't know that we necessarily need to go into do those because it's a different team. So we're not quite sure how the makeup of this unit is going to be with him at its center. But I think he needs to be, you know, a little bit better, particularly in pick and roll situations. That's a big weakness of his. And we saw moments during the second half of the season, I believe in the playoffs, where he played a little bit better in that regard. But that needs to be a more consistent effort. If that means a block or two less per game, then so be it. Because
pick and rolls.
Yes. Sorry. Yes, absolutely.
I was like, he's really good at finishing them. I was a little confused. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Defending pick and rolls, getting up high and defending them. Yeah.
Right. Offensively, I mean, there are gaps as well, particularly as a playmaker, a passer, being able to, you know, pass out of double teams. That was one of the things that you and I talked about in our most recent podcast. And I think that's something that he definitely needs to continue to explore and develop, because we've seen glimmers here and there, but they're all too infrequent, and we need to see him be more consistent as a passer. You know, if they're going to continue to play along those lines that Luke Babbitt had pointed out in that article by Ira Winderman in the Sun Sentinel, you know, that 4-out-1-in style with Whiteside at the center, then he needs to be a little bit more willing to pass the ball and to create more opportunities along the perimeter.
Yeah, I have some numbers here talking about what he can do to improve offensively. So much of what he did was finishing on alley-oops and dunks and pick-and-roll situations. Sure. And that was really, like, a lot of his offense. Towards the end of the year, he started to think that he had a jump shot, you know, and I wrote a while ago, but I wrote for today's fast break, that jump shot was fool's gold. And he started that in January. And why I didn't like that jumper was because it was taking away Miami's only rebounder away from the glass. And so if he missed, which he did, you know, almost 60% of the time, based on jumpers he took, then there's nobody there to rebound the ball. And that was one of his biggest strengths, was rebounding. So I hope that I think it's good, but to expand his game and to have a jump shot, but I don't want him to rely on it and just default to it like he did so often last year. But some of these other numbers I looked at were a little troubling. 200 of his 273 makes he had last year were assisted, where only 140 were unassisted, meaning basically he needs somebody to feed him the ball in scoring position in order to score. He's not a guy that you can give the ball to who's going to make a lot of post moves or take anybody off the dribble. You know, he's not like Boogie Cousins, where he can basically take the ball and take somebody off the dribble. He's not Blake Griffin in that way either.
Right.
You really need to get him the ball. And a lot of times he is compared to DeAndre Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And Doc Rivers has said, I don't run plays for DeAndre Jordan. I don't run plays for him. And when 273 of your makes are assisted compared to 140 are unassisted, the Heat have to run a lot of plays, specific plays for Whiteside. And I think what he could probably do better is, you know, putbacks and things like that, which he does do, but he might need to do a better job of that, as well as incorporating some post moves. And of all of his shots, I mean, we talk about his efficiency around the rim. He made 96.8% of his dunks, 62% almost of his layups. So basically anything within a few inches of the rim, he's money. But anything beyond that, I mean, even his hook shot was only 45.5%. And that's one of those shots where you talk about, like, he'll take the ball and just kind of ram his shoulder into the body of a double team. And he'll just kind of put up a shot. A lot of times that ends up as, like, this weird, you know, off the back foot hook shot thing that he does, which I think is only considered a hook shot because he just throws it up with one hand. It barely looks like a hook shot. And I think that might be what NBA.com is referring to as a hook shot. And he's making less than 50% of that, where he probably could be passing out of those situations.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's something he definitely needs to get more consistent and better at. And I mean, we'd like to see him be a little bit more versatile down low. I mean, you know, you talked about his lack of a low post game. You know, it's too easy for him to just kind of, you know, make one up fake and hope that somebody bites on that. But too often, that's not the case. I would say most of those unassisted field goals are probably, as you alluded to, like putbacks and things of that sort. I think that's probably the only times that he really scores unassisted. Other than that, most of those, you know, field goal attempts were assisted. And I don't even know if those were necessarily plays, though. I mean, I would have said that they were probably the result of play breakdowns, or maybe the gravity of Dwayne Wade as a pick and roll man, where he, you know, drew an extra defender on there, and that freed up, you know, Hassan Whiteside to be more of a rim runner and be able to catch the lot in open space that way. So, I mean, that's something that's going to be a huge question for Miami moving forward.
And that's going to be one of our things to work on, is the chemistry between Hassan Whiteside and Goran Dragic, who I think in a lot of ways is going to have to replace Dwayne Wade as the guy that gets him the ball. But before we get to that, Chris Bosh, this whole situation. We had our immediate reaction podcast go up earlier this week about his documentary episode for Uninterrupted, his Facebook Live Q&A, and everything surrounding that. We don't know if he's medically cleared yet. There's only a couple more days here until the team has to hop onto a flight and go to an island in the middle of the ocean. So, is this going to be a distraction for this team during training camp?
There's a number of ways of looking at it, but I personally think it will be, because I think You go to training camp hoping that you can, again, regain focus, you know, work on those little things, build camaraderie and chemistry, you know, establish leadership, you know, show off new wrinkles theoretically in your game that you developed over the offseason, et cetera. And unfortunately, I think you're going to get bogged down on all of these questions about Chris Bosh, his health, whether or not there's a contentious relationship between him and the front office. If he's not cleared, when will he be cleared? I mean, if he is cleared, then it's going to continue to be an issue. I think it'd probably be best if he's cleared immediately and somehow not a major focus moving forward as far as like the line of questioning and the reporters and everything else like that. If he's not cleared, that's where the drama starts, and that's where it's going to be most troubling, I think. And if there's going to be one blessing, it's the fact that a lot of the people on this team now weren't teammates of Bosh, so they don't necessarily have a personal stake at it, you know, involved. They may not know him, so it's easier for them to just kind of say, oh, well, I'm here to develop, you know, my game, et cetera. I want to focus on what I'm doing. But it also worries me in the sense that guys like Derek Williams and Deion Waiters came from rather chaotic situations or have been in part of chaotic teams during their, you know, brief NBA careers. And you don't want that to be the case here. They specifically signed with Miami because of the ability of this team to harness a player, develop them, and get them to you know, become the help them to realize the potential that they were always capable of doing. And this is a team that's supposed to be well-structured, well-organized. To come into camp and have the shadow of Chris Bosh's situation and the possible chaos and drama that might ensue does not bode well for this team. I think that could be a potential issue as well. So if I had to say if it'll be a troubling issue, I would say yes, especially if he's not cleared by the team.
You know, the option does remain that Chris Bosh could fly with the team and be there for training camp, even if he's not medically cleared to participate, to stand on the sidelines and coach people up or whatever. I highly doubt that he's going to do that, but it would be...
Wouldn't he be like, you know, take advantage of that in the way he has in the past and say, look, I'd like to be out there, but they're not letting me play, et cetera.
It could be a way for him to get some of this goodwill back, right? We talked about in our reaction pod about how he lost some of the support of fans when he came out with that documentary and everything. A lot of people feel like he's making this more of a distraction than maybe it needs to be. And that would be one way to, you know, to show his support and to show his support to the organization too and saying, hey, look, I'm being a class act here. I'm doing whatever I can do for this organization. You guys at least talk to me. You know, I'm here. Talk to me. We're in the Bahamas. There's not a lot of media here. Talk to me about what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know that would be very supportive on his part. I think that would be like the ultimate distraction. That would raise the distraction.
If he was there, it would be more distracting.
Absolutely. If he's there and not cleared, it's kind of like, what the hell? What is the problem here? I'm here. I'm capable of playing. You all know I'm capable of playing. All I'm waiting for is the word go, and I'll be out there. Instead, you keep me on the sidelines, and I can't really do anything but pretend to coach up these guys, et cetera.
Well, that's going to be more of a problem. You're right. I mean, it depends on his approach. But I think if you're a young player and you're wondering, okay, are we going to have Chris Bosh as our starting power forward or no? If you're Josh Richardson, Winslow, and Waiters and these guys, and Tyler Johnson, who look up to Chris Bosh, I think it would be less distracting for the players if Bosh was there. Because at least you could talk to him and get something from Chris Bosh as opposed to him not being there. I feel like as a part of a team, it would be weird if somebody as good as Bosh wasn't there. But
I kind of disagree with that. I think that, you know, especially for the new guys like Waiters and Williams, especially Derek Williams and James Johnson, these are guys competing for that spot. You know, they want to be able to play a bulk of their minutes at the 3 and 4. They know what they're trying to take this experience and make that into a more lucrative contract down the road. They want this to be a positive one. They don't want that crap hanging over them.
Yeah.
It's like, look,
well, they know they're not getting the starting job if Bosh is available. But it's okay. We could disagree. We always agree on so many things. It's okay for us to disagree on something. We disagree on this.
One thing we don't disagree on is the Locked On Podcast Network.
We don't disagree on that because we both work for that network. yeah, Locked On NBA, Locked On Fantasy Basketball with our guy Josh Lloyd. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you're listening to the Locked On Basketball Network, but maybe you're not taking advantage of what the network has to offer. If you're listening to this and you're a Miami Heat fan, you're probably, hopefully, a Miami Dolphins fan. Now, I know they're 0-2. They kind of suck. Ryan Tannehill might not be the guy. The running game is a mess. There's a lot of injuries. But to spin it positive and tell you why the Heat or why the Dolphins might be good, you can listen to Locked On Dolphins. They're going to play the Browns. They're going to make Cody Kessler look like a Hall of Famer this weekend. That's fine. That's what the Dolphins do. Locked On Dolphins, great podcast over there. Locked On NBA, Locked On Fantasy Basketball for all your basketball needs. So check out Locked On, the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Same stuff you do when you subscribe to the show, which you should be subscribing to this show. If you're not subscribed to Locked On Heat, you should definitely subscribe to Locked On Heat and leave us a review because we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
All right, some things to work on. We've talked about the players a lot this week. We haven't really talked a lot about Eric Spoelstra, unless it's been in passing. You know, this is obvious impact on the players. But specifically on Eric Spoelstra, I think this is going to be his one of his toughest coaching seasons yet. I mean, this is a team without Wade. This is a team without a lot of veteran leadership. Who knows what's happening with Bosch, as we've talked about. There's going to be a lot of new players to get acclimated, but we've seen Spoelstra take over a lot of flipped over positions and get guys ready soon. Like, that's something Spoelstra has shown that he can do, get guys acclimated to his system. But there's just a lot of players this time, and it's a new system too. I mean, this is a team that is trying to play faster, and Spoelstra's talked about this so much, but in general, the Heat have been a slow team. Even those last couple of years of the Big Three, they were really good in transition. They gave the impression that they played fast, but overall pace, they weren't that fast.
I think his biggest challenge... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, go ahead. I mean, in the half court, I think, is the major thing that needs to change, and Spoelstra needs to change himself, is implementing a faster offense in the half court.
Yeah, I think, you know, for him, the biggest challenge is going to be working together with these new personalities, particularly guys... You know, I hate to keep going on this point, but you can't dismiss the fact that a lot of these new players have come from somewhat chaotic situations and are looking for more stability. And this is a great opportunity for Spoelstra to show why he's one of the better coaches in the league. You know, we've talked about some of the other coaches in the division, Steve Clifford, Frank Vogel, Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta. When we did all of our crossover pods, but, you know, we talked about the quality of coaching in our division. And Spoelstra is certainly right up there. And he's got the chops for it. He's got the resume, you know, considering he's got two titles under his belt and four trips to the NBA Finals. But a lot of that had to do with the personnel. And you need to see a little bit more flexibility from Spoelstra this time around, because he really needs to be able to reach these players.
I'm glad you bring that up, because when you look at interviews with Derek Williams and Deion Waiters and Luke Babbitt and these guys, they all point towards the stability of the organization and the overall coaching of the organization as a reason why they signed in Miami. There's an expectation of the players to Spoelstra to be like, dude, save my career. Like, that's a real thing for him. And, you know, with this team so much younger and with so many guys gone now, Spoelstra also needs to step up as a leader. Not saying he wasn't, but he rightly so gave a lot of those leadership responsibilities in the past to Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Chris Bosh. We don't know, you know, two of those guys are gone and we have no idea what's going on with Bosh. It's Spoelstra's team now. This is really the first opportunity he's going to have to be the leader of this group, to be, I've made this comparison before, but like, be the Brad Stevens of this. Like, when Brad Stevens entered, you know, the Boston Celtics organization, he was a young coach, sure, but it was a very, very young team, and he was basically, like, the team revolved around his system, almost. He had to put his imprint on the organization. And I think, in a lot of ways, even though Spoelstra's been here, he's going to have to put an imprint on this organization that maybe he hasn't had to do before, you know?
I'd like to see a lot less Spoisms this time around, to be honest with you.
We've been disagreeing a lot. I like the Spoisms.
I mean, no, I like them too. Look, they've been a benchmark here for, you know, seven seasons now. But I think, you know, it's time for him to kind of let go of the rope a little bit and move forward, I think, because, you know, this is it's time to burn the bridge or whatever it is that he says, burn the boats. it's time to let go of those faux-isms and move forward and kind of connect with these people as individuals, not as cliches. And I'm sure that he does it.
That's how he talks to the media. You think he like tells Justice Winslow, hey, I really like how you left your skin on the basketball court out there?
Yes, I do. I do think so. If anything we've seen from him, you know, he's got an overwork mentality there. I think he's super dedicated. And I think he maybe just a tad robotic. I don't know. It's interesting.
Ethan Skolnick, when he's at CBS Sports right now, but he was working at Bleacher Report a couple years ago. He had, right before he left, where was he right before Bleacher Report? He's moved around so many times. The Palm Beach Post?
It was, yeah.
Okay, so right before he left the Post to go to Bleacher Report, he dropped a column basically talking about the real Eric Spoelstra. How he, you know, wears basketball shorts and baggy t-shirts, and he talks completely differently when he's around his players as opposed to when he's talking in front of the media. He's got like two different accents, is the way he put it.
Really?
Yeah. Go back and find that, because I always thought like Spoelstra's a little robotic, a little kind of like old man Spo a little bit, you know?
Sure.
But this column was really eye-opening, how he does really relate to players and likes to talk about music and stuff like that with these guys. And
he just got married to a Heat dancer, for crying out loud. I don't think anybody saw
some
that.
Some street cred, right? Like, that's definitely some street cred with the team.
I mean, one of our favorite players of all time, Brian Grant, was married to an ex-Sacramento Kings cheerleader. I mean, for Spo to, you know, that's a pretty big get for
him. Miami Heat cheerleader. Like, I live in Northern California, and I've seen the type of people that are in Sacramento. Spoelstra wins in that battle. That's all I'm saying.
I'm sure he does. kudos to them and mazel tov to them. I'm sure they're going to have a wonderful summer, hopefully a wonderful lifetime together.
All right, so Spoelstra's girlfriend turned wife aside. Another thing that this team is going to have to work on, and this falls right into what Spoelstra is going to have to do as far as implementing a faster pace and a new offense in a lot of ways, because Dwayne Wade was so heavily used in that offense. I mean, his usage rate alone was always hovering around 30%. And I don't see a player on this roster that's going to demand the ball like that. As much as Deion Waiters wants to be that guy, he's not going to be. But a big thing for this team is going to be the chemistry between Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside, as we talked about earlier, with the pick and roll specifically. And I've brought this up before, but Dwayne Wade assisted Whiteside 92 times. Dragic assisted him only 65 times. Dragic is the point guard. He was the guy that's supposed to be assisting players the most. That's almost a 30-assist difference, and Wade played more games than Goran Dragic. So, to me, Goran Dragic those are numbers. The eye test never looked right with Goran Dragic, Hassan Whiteside. Whiteside was always moving a little bit slower than I think Goran Dragic wanted to move. Wade always kind of was very slow in that pick and roll. He was very patient with Whiteside, and I think Whiteside was better with him. The Spoelstra and the team has already said, we want Whiteside to help push the pace. We want him to be part of the faster pace. We don't want to play around him, you know, as far as pushing the ball down the court. He needs to be a part of that. So Whiteside, I think, more than anything, we talk about so much with Goran Dragic getting on the same page with Whiteside. I think Whiteside's also going to have to get on the same page with Goran Dragic. He's just not going to have as much time to think and find the space as he did with Wade in that pick and roll specifically.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the onus should definitely fall on Whiteside, because as we talked about before, the personnel of this team is best suited for Dragic's, you know, strengths and pushing the pace, etc. So if he wants to play as effectively as possible as part of this team and this offense, then he needs to, and this is Whiteside, he needs to get on the same page. It's up to him to realize he needs to react quicker. He needs to be able to adjust more quickly and see where, you know, Dragic likes his particular spots. Because if anything, you know, Dragic is different than Wade in that he's much faster. Obviously, Wade slows down a little bit, waits till the defender comes to him, and then is able to leap over them and, again, toss that lob to Whiteside, who's there, you know, kind of trailing behind slowly, waiting for that perfect pass, which was always delivered by Wade. You know, that's his strength as a facilitator. But Dragic is different. He finds seams the defense. He gets on, you know, he curls around the basket. Mm-hmm. He manages to elude not one or two defender along the way. And if Whiteside wants to be able to, you know, connect with him, then he needs to be able to play off of that a little bit more efficiently than what we saw last season. And I'm confident that they can do that. I think we saw enough glimpses of a connection there last season to think that they'll continue to build on that with Wade off the floor. Both of them are, you know, they're smart in terms of basketball IQ, I think. Whiteside can certainly adapt to that style of play. I tend to think that they're going to be able to establish a pretty strong connection early on.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of Snapchat videos from Whiteside about working on the pick and roll, too. I wonder if the coaches he was working on were trying to, or the emulate. Coaches he worked with, yeah, trying to like mimic a little bit of what Dragic does. I don't know. But you can't really tell a lot from the Snapchat video, but it's interesting. Another part of that offense that, you know, I think this Whiteside-Dragic pick and roll has the makings to be a staple of that offense. You know, when in doubt, run that, or run a motion that leads to a pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
But this team's also going to have to find other ways to score. Dwayne Wade's gone. I mean, at the end of games, we talk about it all the time, but just in general, if the team needed a basket in the middle of the second quarter, they would turn to Dwayne Wade. I don't know who that guy is now. Maybe it's Goran Dragic, maybe it's Hassan Whiteside. It probably should be one of them. But in general, just nobody is the natural scorer that Dwayne Wade was. And in overall, this team's going to have to do a lot more ball movement, and I see that being something that they're going to be working on in training camp, is passing the ball, moving the ball. I mean, didn't Greg Popovich have that rule a while ago? Like, don't even take the open shot if you haven't made one pass yet. I mean, that's like right. A little league rule, right? But that Greg Popovich took all the way to the NBA. that might be a situation that's in the Bahamas this next week, right? Is Spoelstra's like, don't take the shot even if you're wide open. We need at least one or two passes per possession.
Oh, I'm sorry for Dion. He's going to struggle with that drill, if anything. I think that's going to be tough for him. And, you know, it's not that he's not capable of passing, but this is a guy who's never been scared to take it to the rack. I think he's even seen, you know, he sees three defenders in front of him and says, no, that's a pretty easy shot for me to get off. And so I'm concerned that he's going to have the most trouble there. But, you know, you made a comparison to Brad Stevens as far as an analogy to what Eric Spoelstra is going to be facing this year. But what if the team could follow that same pattern in Boston, where it's not, as you know, our good friend Ian Levy described last year, it's a superstar-less team, you know, where it's just a widespread offense taken over by everybody. You know, 10 points here, nobody averages more than 20 or barely over 20, and nobody averages less than 9 or so. You're just getting contributions across the board. I could see that being a good model for this team moving forward, where you don't necessarily have a dominant scorer, although it's more than likely to be Chris Bosch if he's back. But even he could take a step back. Look, he's done it before. He's changed his game. He wasn't necessarily a prolific scorer when he was here with the big three. I mean, he was the third best scorer on that team. And that was by design because the team, you know, needed his talents. But for this particular style, maybe it's best if everybody just averages between, you know, 10 to 18 points per game. And maybe Dragic is the team's leading scorer. But on one night, it could be Whiteside. Another night, it could be Bosch. On another night, it could be Waiters off the bench. You never know. I mean, you just need to get contributions from everybody. You know, we've talked about, you know, Justice Winslow developing into more of a Draymond Green. But what if he's more like a Jay Crowder type in Boston and he just continues to excel defensively, scores when he's able to, gets to the rack when he has to, and can, you know, spot it from outside? I mean, obviously, he needs to develop his shooting a little bit better. But there's a good pattern of a good, you know, style of play in Boston that Miami might do best to emulate.
You're running with this, man. And I'm buying what you're selling. I love it. I think this team is more deep than it is talented, if that makes sense. You know, you have guys like Tyler Johnson who is going to get his chance. Or even like a Wayne Ellington, you know what I mean? Like, he can hit some threes. Luke Babbitt, he can hit some threes. I think a lot of people are going to look at Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside's stats and look at the investment that the Miami Heat have put into them and say, why aren't they averaging 20 points a game? And especially because that's what a lot of Heat fans are used to.
Right.
But Whiteside's real value, as we know, is on the defensive end. And that's, if we're going to make that comparison to Boston, that's something Boston lacked. I mean, Boston probably would have paid Hassan Whiteside $98 million last year if they knew that they could have him for the playoffs, right?
Right, yeah, maybe.
And I like the comparison to Jay Crowder for Justice Winslow because it almost takes that expectation down a little bit. It's like, okay, just make your bones where you can. We know that you're going to do your thing on defense, that you're going to be elite and that you're going to be our prime perimeter defender. Whiteside's going to be our rim protector. Those two guys alone make at least a above average defense. And everybody else, you know, just take the open shot. Just everybody help each other score. I love it. And then at the end of the games, Goran Dragic could play the Isaiah Thomas role. He's not a superstar scorer, but he might be just good enough at the end of a game to get it done. You know, I think we see so often at the end of games in the NBA, right? You just see the superstar go ISO. And you and I, just as fans of the NBA, we complain about that. Like, you guys are running plays the entire game, and at the end of the game, you just run an ISO, and it works 50% of the time, and you just hope that you're lucky that one night. Maybe at the end of the games, they're not doing that. Maybe at the end, or maybe it really doesn't, you don't need that superstar at the end of games as much as maybe we think. And part of Spoelstra putting his imprint on the roster is on this team is going to be a little Brad Stevens-y, like you're talking about, where, okay, you guys are going to score a lot because of the plays that I'm drawing up. As much as it was in the past based on the individual talents of the players, Spoelstra can start manufacturing points. We already know that he's a master of out-of-timeout plays, right? So,
right. Yeah, I mean, I think fans would embrace that style of play. I think it's a transition, but I think they would embrace it. I think, you know, you see what, you know, Boston shouldn't succeed. On paper, you look at their roster prior to them adding Isaiah Thomas or you know, Al Horford this past offseason, that's a team that probably wasn't meant to succeed because of their lack of star power, and yet they're consistently in the playoffs. And maybe they're not built for a deep run until this season. You know, and everybody talks about that. In this league, you need a superstar. I don't know that you necessarily don't have one in Boston anymore, but I think you certainly have one in Chris Bosh. And he can certainly still be that leader at the end of games if he's available and healthy, obviously. But, there's an opportunity there for everybody to share the ball, to be more of a cohesive unit and not necessarily be dominated by any one player anymore. It would be an interesting transition.
Yeah, I love it. And, a lot of the, so let's just move on to the key roster battles. Now, I think there's a clear line of demarcation on this team of who's making the team and who's not. You know, there might be a couple guys there that they're a little iffy. And I think one of those positions is Beno Udrih versus Briante Weber. You and I, in the point guard preview, talked about how the signing of Udrih really looked like, you know, the letter to Briante saying, okay, you're going to play another year on the Sioux Falls Skyforce. But he's going to have every chance to beat Beno out in training camp and in preseason, probably. Can he do it? Like, is there any universe where Briante makes this 15-man roster? Or do you think it's kind of just over?
No, I think he could. I mean, without knowing the particulars of the deal, I mean, there are probably guys a lot more familiar with the nature of those deals that might be able to, you know, speak to that. But I would say that if we kind of follow that same premise that we just talked about, Miami developing a more widespread, cohesive unit that way, you'd need guys to fit specific roles and do those very well. And I think, you know, you have enough playmaking in the backcourt with guys like Waiters, Dragic, and others, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson when he returns. You might need a guy who's more of a defensive-minded player, and I think Weber is clearly an upgrade over Udrih in that sense. And so if you look at it from that perspective, maybe they kind of forget the deal that they struck with Beno Udrih, although we've seen him in a lot of promotional situations recently. I mean, he's been working together with the team. He's clearly part of the team, you know, at this point. And you know, recently, I think he was at I can't remember exactly what the event was, but he was there with Tyler Johnson and Udonis Haslam, you know, and speaking to like a medical community in South Florida. I saw pictures on the internet and I wasn't quite sure what it was, but I was struck by, you know, the fact that Beno Udrih, who just joined the team a few weeks ago, is already there representing the team publicly. So, you know, he's a polished veteran. So
he's probably just been hanging out outside the American Airlines arena, just hanging out outside, waiting for them to offer the contract. And he's like, yeah, I'm here. I'm ready to sign it.
Well, wasn't he working out with the team even before he got the deal?
That's right. That's true.
Yeah. So, look, they like what he brings to the table there. I mean, there's, again, some experience, some veteran leadership there. Maybe there's a declining skill set, although we did see him play well in spots. You know, but other than that, I mean, maybe you could kind of work him into more of a coaching role, you know, or something along those lines. So maybe if he doesn't make the team, you keep Weber instead, but you keep Beno Udrih as an assistant to Chris Quinn, perhaps.
The league would official assistant to Chris Quinn.
Why not?
All right, the other battle that I think is probably the most important going into training camp. This isn't really for a roster spot, but it's for a position. And that's the backup four behind Chris Bosh. And this becomes very important if Chris Bosh can't play. All of a sudden, this becomes a starting four. I'm starting to think that those two positions might be different. If Bosh doesn't play, I think who gets the start might be different than if Bosh can play and who's the first to back him up. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I think the more I think about it, Josh McRoberts has a real opportunity to be the starting four. If this team if this team needs more spacing, if you're, it's between Josh McRoberts, Derek Williams, and James Johnson, neither of them are proficient three-point shooters by any means, but McRoberts is probably the best out of all of them if he can somehow rekindle that jump shot that he once had, that he kind of lost when he came to Miami for whatever reason. If he can refine that, and that's probably a lot of this training camp is going to be him trying to refine that, right? He makes more sense to me as a floor spacer in that starting unit.
But is he really more of a floor spacer than, say, Derek Williams at this point? I mean, he's...
Not if he can't shoot, no.
Yeah, I mean, for his career, he's a 33.6% shooter. I mean, that's from three-point range. I guess there's still the threat there that he could probably knock it down from long range. That's an upgrade over James Johnson or Derek Williams, obviously. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, he needs to be able to consistently knock those down. Now, he could start potentially because of his playmaking ability, which is something that we could see of. You know, if you swing it around
the perimeter. Right, is your ability to pass the ball and move the ball.
Right, and in that regard, he's clearly an upgrade over the other two players. Now, he might lack the athleticism to be an adequate trailer on a fast break opportunity. He's probably not, athletic. I don't think he's ever been much of a cutter, although he's a smart enough player where he can get in the right spots. The cutting towards the basket has never been really the strength of his game. I would see that probably Derek Williams and James Johnson are probably better in that regard. But as a playmaker, I think McRoberts is clearly better. So there's some added benefit there. I think you've talked about him as the best option to start in place of Bosh if he's not available on other occasions. And I like it. I mean, I see why you might move in that option. And a lot of fans probably listening to this are probably frustrated and done with McRoberts. They don't want to see him even on the floor.
Well, if he starts stepping on his own toes like he kind of did these last couple of years and just kind of like getting in his own way, then he becomes a problem, on the floor. And that's why he so often was regulated to the bench. But if he can stay out of his own way and take open shots when he has them, I think he can be of value still.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think we all want to see it. I think, we had hoped that he'd be that player in 2014, and we're just waiting for that to happen. And hopefully this will be the season when it does.
And with the other guys, I think James Johnson, I think he's more of a backup to Justice Winslow. Maybe plays some occasional four, but I just see that his strengths are so redundant, like a poor man's Justice Winslow. To me, it just makes more sense that if Winslow's out and you still need a strong plus defender, plus perimeter defender, it makes a lot of sense to have James Johnson. He did start a few games at the four for the Raptors. He can do that. And Derek
Williams, didn't he kind of take a step back last season? And that I think he kind of they saw good things from him two seasons ago, and then he kind of came into camp out of shape, never really rounded into form, and kind of took a major step back. And certainly didn't help that they had guys like DeMar Carroll and others step up throughout the course of the season. He kind of played himself out of the rotation, much to the chagrin of Raptors fans, because I think a lot of them had enjoyed seeing what he did, his enthusiasm, his athleticism, and those things seemed to be missing in action for most of last season. So that was a shame. But maybe
he's like this year's Gerald Green,
possibly. But Gerald Green wasn't an entire disappointment. He did do things better than what we had expected, particularly defensively. He just as a scorer, he just wasn't the most consistent guy, and that was part of the problem. That was part of the frustration, I think, from Eric Spoelstra. But I mean, I'd like to see James come into camp in shape and engaged, and maybe being let go or not offered a contract by Toronto was kind of the eye opener for him, and that he's too close to being either a journeyman or out of the league altogether, and so he needs to recognize this as another opportunity. We talked about Derek Williams, we talked about Deion Waiters, but for James Johnson, this is a really good chance for him to prove that he should be a part of the NBA, not just this year, but the next and the year after that.
And for Derek Williams, I'm really high on this signing. I think I'm higher than most Heat fans are. I just have a lot of expectations from Derek Williams. I think I really put a lot into his bad situations, and I feel like we really don't in general when we think about these guys. And at only 25, it's not too late for him to turn it around. I really don't think it is. He showed flashes last year with the Knicks. He's a good rebounder. He can get some putbacks. He'll have games where he just, you know, can light it up and you're like, wow, this guy's actually pretty good. And then he'll have other games where he disappears. But I think with this opportunity and the stability, I like what he can do. Particularly, I think his three-point shooting from the corners is going to be of value. We talked about that in our forwards preview about how he's not a good three-point shooter, but from the corners, he's actually above average. He's above league average. And that could be a major weapon, especially if Spoelstra has a kind of offense like we've been talking about this podcast, that he's spreading the floor out and he's getting guys open looks. If Derek Williams is like the third or fourth guy at the end that gets the ball on a play and he's wide open in the corner, that could be his whole job, you know?
Yeah. You see him as part of maybe like a fast-paced energy lineup. Yes. I know that you want to look at most of the team being a little bit more up-tempo, et cetera, but you know, if there's a different rotation in place there, you see him as coming in as the four, perhaps, in a fast-paced lineup?
I think he's going to mostly play the four. I actually don't see him playing much three at all.
Right.
And I do think he's going to be the next Marvin Williams. I really do think that.
You and your Marvin Williams fetish. I mean, yeah.
He's good, man.
I don't know. Did you talk when you did our crossover with Lockdown Hornets? Did you spend 15 minutes talking about Marvin Williams and everything he brings to the table?
No, I had too many other. I had too many other important questions that are more interesting to our listeners. But I could have just spent 30 minutes on Marvin Williams. Williams is the next Marvin Williams. I'm telling you, they have the same last name. It's uncanny.
That's a good start. You know, I don't know if there's much else that connects them, but the Williams thing, that's definitely a good building block for both players. So as far as this fast paced lineup, I know we probably want to wrap things up, but who would be on that lineup? You know, I mean, that's something that we'll see once games start in a couple of weeks, but who would be the fast paced lineup for this current version of the Heat?
Is this with or without Bosch?
With, let's say with or without, let's say with and without.
So there's a lineup. That really intrigues me with Bosch. And that's Bosch, Winslow at the four, Josh Richardson at the three, Deion Waiters at the two, and then Goran Dragic, or even Tyler Johnson if Dragic needs a rest at the one. That lineup to me, with Dragic in it and Bosch in it, that has the potential to be Miami's best, you know, net rating lineup, like their version of the death lineup, right? Like every team is going to try to have their death lineup. That's going to be Miami's attempt at it.
Okay, you had a fantastic piece for FanSided. I believe it was last week where you were talking about how other, you know, death lineups throughout the league shouldn't be referred to as death lineups. So that particular lineup, what do you call that one?
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot. It took me like a week to come up with nicknames for those other teams.
Coming up next week, we rename Miami's new quote-unquote death lineup. All right. So if you can't come up with a name for it on the spot, I'm sorry.
The hot lineup. That's my first shot, and it sucks. We'll get there. Huh?
Weak. Sorry. I thought you'd do better than that.
The Heatstroke lineup.
Heatstroke lineup.
Yeah, playing in Miami. Potential. They're gonna sweat you out. They're gonna run you up and down the floor. They're gonna sweat you out. You're gonna get a heat stroke. It's a heat stroke. It's not death, because it's not as good as death, but it's a heat stroke. It just puts you out for a little bit. Heatstroke lineup.
Not as good. Did you say not as good as death? I mean, I don't know if anybody's ever said, "Oh wow, death." Yes, sweet.
But damn it, I got heat stroke. I think even without Bosch, though, you put Whiteside in that lineup, and that's going to be a really good lineup too, I think. And then what if they put Winslow at the five? Let's talk about that.
Okay, what if Winslow at the five? What if McRoberts at the five? I mean, he's big enough to handle that, and then you have more of that playmaking ability that Draymond Green has. You know, he's a good rebounder. He can shoot from the perimeter. I mean, clearly the defensive efficiency is not there, but as far as offense is concerned, you could see a lot of the same kind of skills there for McRoberts. I mean, you could put him at the five, and I think they ran variations of that lineup last season, right?
Yeah, and against Toronto, they did, right, when Whiteside went down. McRoberts, right. Winslow, you're talking about like Roberts and Winslow and Richardson in basically your front court. And I think
basically,
and then you can add it wouldn't really be a front court because of the way they would be playing, but if you had Josh McRoberts at the five, Winslow at the four, and then Josh Richardson, Deion Waiters, and Goran Dragic, that could be really interesting. I think that's gonna be a lot of that going on, right? I mean, you have 19 players going to training camp, or 18 if you don't count Bosch, if we don't know what's happening there. But you know, you can run your five on fives with a lot of different units, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look, it stinks that Richardson's not out there so that you can't start experimenting with these pieces early on. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different players to your point. And then again, we've seen Spoelstra be a little bit strict sometimes, a little bit stubborn in his flexibility regarding lineups and things of that sort. This is a good opportunity for him to show that he's capable of being a little bit more flexible and experimenting a little bit more. Maybe that's not his strong suit. Maybe that's not what he wants to do. But I think this roster is built for that, and I hope that we can see a lot of that during the course of the preseason.
Well, we're going to be covering training camp more when it actually is happening. So that's next week. Starting Tuesday, the Heat fly to the Bahamas, which is going to be renamed officially as Waiters Island while they're there. So
absolutely,
that to look forward to. And after training camp, hopefully we'll have some, for now we'll call them mystery guests, that can come on and talk about some insight knowledge about what's going on with the Heat after training camp, right? Just
absolutely,
a little tease
there.
A little tease. All right, well, that's all we have for today. And whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, or you can send us mailbag questions. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks, David, for joining me.
You got it, Wes.
We'll catch you next time. I get my kicks and I want to start a rage here. I want to dance like I'm on the video. I got a fever for violent behavior. I'm sweating bullets like I'm Martin Romeo.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.